We are 24 hours away from Game 1 of the NBA Finals. Welcome to the Fantasy NBA Today podcast, a Sports Ethos presentation hosted by yours truly, Aaron Pruski and FSWA Hall of Famer Steve Dr. A. Alexander. This is a special finals preview episode now that we've all sat around tapping our foot for about a week. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm ready to run through a brick wall for this series. But before I do my best Kool-Aid Man imitation, I want you guys to give you guys a much more general reminder that subscribing to the show, liking the show, giving us 5 stars and all that truly does help to add to the product offering over here. So if you do that, we are forever grateful. Drop us some feedback at Aaron Bruski, AaronBruski, at Dr. A, DocTora, at Ethos Fantasy NBA, and let us know how we're doing. And while you're at it, follow Ethos Fantasy NBA and Ethos Fantasy NFL so you guys can be aware of all the promo stuff that's coming through very soon. NFL draft guides right around the corner, and so we're just going to get wild with some promo stuff. With that out of the way, let me welcome in Steve Dr. A. Alexander. So when Luca starts staring at the competition with their blood dripping out of his mouth, are you going to be like moshing around the office, waking up your neighbors 10 miles away?
Yeah. I picked Boston to win it all at the beginning of the playoffs, and I stuck with that all the way through. But then Dallas got in there, and now suddenly Luka's the hottest player in the world. He looks like the best player in the world. And all this history between Kyrie Irving and the Celtics, I just feel like the Mavericks are going to win.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it a little bit last week, and I think if you've been listening, you know where we stand on this, and we're going to get deeper into the angles. But before that, BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA and NHL playoffs this season. Get every stat, matchup, and even get live odds while the games are being played. And then when the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our over 150 slots. Head to the website today to get on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. I need to get my read game down to like one or two unforced errors per show. That's a goal of mine.
Well, dude, you're reading at like 180 miles per hour. So I couldn't do it. I have no idea how you do it.
I mean, I guess you just got to get through it, right? So we need the micro machines man to come in here and train me on how to do that. I don't know if anybody of our listeners know who that guy is, but he could talk fast. We got a lot to cover here. Where to start? Well, I'll tell you, tomorrow we're going to be talking about the Chicago Bulls, so we'll start there. But Luka Doncic is impossible to defend, ? Steve?
Yeah. Yeah, he is. And, I mean, I kind of think if I was Boston, my plan would be throw Jrue Holiday and Derek White on Kyrie Irving, let Luka do his thing, but shut Irving down and make Luka and Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington beat you.
That's my second question. Can they do it? Can literally you're like reading my mind. I jotted down a bunch of notes that I thought would be really fun to talk about here. That's literally the second one on my list is, can the Boston guards cover Kyrie Irving? Can Derek White and Jrue Holiday do that?
I mean, if you put Jaylen Brown, who's a pretty good defender, if you put him on Luka and then put those two hound dogs on Kyrie, it'd be interesting to see what happens. The only thing that I worry about if I'm Boston at that point is Luka just goes into step back three mode and hits 10 of them and, you know, gets the place pumping. I don't know if anybody can stop Kyrie Irving consistently. It would be Jrue Holiday and Derek White. I mean, they say that Luka and Kyrie are the best offensive backcourt in the league, and those guys are the best defensive backcourt. I don't know if that's going to be their plan. Jaylen Brown on Luka and the two guards on Kyrie. But I mean, that's something I would look at. And then I don't know if they can stop him or not, but that's how I would start out trying.
I want to say, I actually think that's a great strategy, which is kind of why I think was thinking Boston would do something like that, which is kind of why I thought the question was appropriate. You know, in my mind, I was trying to cycle through, okay, which NBA defenders would I pick out of a lineup to cover Kyrie Irving? And the one that came to mind that I thought might be like maybe the only one that could handle this kind of a thing would be a non-injured Gary Payton II, or the first for that matter. But like in terms of players that have played lately, because Kyrie, the crazy thing about him and Luka, this is the crazy thing that this pairing has actually worked out, that you know, that they're happy and healthy and here they are in the NBA finals. But the crazy thing about this pairing is that old adage of good offense beats good defense. Like if Luka does whatever Luka wants to do with the spin moves and the strength, and he might have an easier time against his personnel on the other side than Kyrie would have against Derek F and White and Drew F and Holiday. I mean, these guys are there anybody better in the league that you could think of that played in the last year to cover a Kyrie Irving?
There may be one, but I mean, I don't, off the top of my head, no. I mean, DeJounte Murray can play defense, but he's not as good as those guys. I'm sure there's one we're not thinking of. There's got
to
be
somebody out there. But I mean, to the point that
Herb Jones, maybe.
Some length on Kyrie, I think, could be a good thing. Even like Jaden McDaniels, you know, you could theoretically see an argument. But he's so shifty, and that's the problem. I wonder with Derek White and Drew Holiday is, like, with White, Kyrie can kind of body him a little bit. And then with Drew, he can't body him at all. But like getting around him and just kind of getting up and over him for those fallaway jumpers, and he needs one little slit of daylight, and well,
I'm sorry. The problem is if they double team Kyrie, it leaves somebody open. And guess who the best passer in the league is? But guess who has the best court vision in the league? It's Luka. And if somebody's open somewhere, he's going to find them. So I think Boston's got their hands full here. I really do. And it's not just because I'm a homer. It's not just because I'm a Luka lover.
You're both of those things.
And I think Boston beat them both times they met this season.
They crushed them in the last one. I'm pretty sure they went 2-0.
But I don't know that Dallas actually had their current team together at that point. So
no.
And I'm not really looking at that. I don't really care about history. This is a new world.
I think the odds makers are looking at that stuff, or the public is looking at that stuff, which is helpful for folks like us.
Yeah, but Dallas went on that run at the end of the season when they went like 18-4 or something crazy. And, you know, they were way better than Boston just record wise at that point.
But I don't think people bought it.
This team is a different team now than it was at the All-Star break.
Clearly people didn't buy it because you could get Dallas at a crazy rate heading into the NBA finals. And you could still get them at plus 175, I believe. So not a lot of faith that this is an equal matchup. But let's not go that way. And I want to footnote this, that big game. I want to say it was March 1. We'll footnote that just as we move throughout the rotation here and talk about some of these matchups. But this Kyrie Irving thing, like, I think your best odds strategy is dead on with Boston. I think they're going to switch a lot of stuff. So that's really interesting. And then with Porzingis, I think they'll play him in drop coverage. So you're going to get a lot of crazy matchups all over the floor. your strategy of having those two guys cover Kyrie Irving, I mean, if they're switching that stuff, that gets kind of thrown out a little bit. And then you get Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum with the length on Kyrie Irving. I guess if I was Boston, I'd be hoping that those two guards, not the guys I just mentioned, but the two guards could do a good enough job. And then in the switching scheme that Kyrie sees enough different defenders and then some of that additional length, and it somehow all comes together and turns him into passive Kyrie. Like the Kyrie we saw in, what was that, game five, where he felt like he couldn't shoot. That to me might be the recipe. But I just don't know if they can do it.
Well, and the other thing,
like, I think Kyrie can get around those guys and kind of get to whatever shot. So it really blows a hole in the coverage if Luka on the other side of the pattern can also do the same thing. Let's spin out of this Luka-Kyrie talk. And what about Boston and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum? How do you feel about their matchups against, say, like PJ Washington, Josh Green, Derek Jones Jr., Dante Exum? Do you think they can win those matchups convincingly, or is this a recipe for Boston to be inefficient?
That's a pretty good question. The thing about Boston is I don't really worry about their offense, and they are a very balanced, very good team. Like, they have six guys on that team that are capable of scoring 20 points any night of the week. Tatum and Brown, obviously, and then Drew Holiday, Porzingis, Derek White. I mean, there's guys. Hell, Al Horford can get hot. So Dallas or Boston has a very, very balanced scoring offense. So, I mean, Jason Tatum, regardless of who he's matched up with, is going to get his, and Jaylen Brown is going to get his, or at least they're going to get their shots. And I don't think they need to worry about being double teamed. I think Tatum's a little ticked off. He didn't win the Eastern Conference Finals MVP, so he's going to be trying to make a statement here, I think.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fine. I just lost my train of thought. I don't know.
Jason Tatum can do that too.
He did. He made me
he stop just shut you tracks. Down. Just it stopped you in your tracks right there. It's the inefficiency question. Like, that's the Miami Heat used to do it to them all the time. And I'll say Toronto did a pretty good job. Maybe not all the time, but that. Okay. So the knock on Boston is that in crunch time, it's Jason Tatum taking some kind of step back or, you know, long distance shot, not getting to the rim. Jaylen Brown, kind of same ballpark, maybe three happy, you know, that they just don't have smart crunch time offense. And then that kind of, I want to say, like, Boston backers and people who were talking about that narrative said, well, look at the Pacers series and look at what they did in crunch time. So there's no issues here anymore, but it's like historically been the problem for them. What about PJ Washington? He was covering Anthony Edwards last series. And he, to me, I thought he did a great job. Do you think that he can be an impact defensive player against like Tatum perhaps?
Yeah, I don't know why he wouldn't be. I agree with you. He did a good job on Edwards. He's going to probably do a good job on Tatum, but I don't, like I said before, I don't think you're going to really stop Tatum or Jaylen Brown, just like you're not going to stop Luka from scoring and getting there. So, as the old saying goes, they're not going to try to stop him. They only hope to contain him. So if PJ Washington can at least contain Jason Tatum, I think that would be a success for Boston.
What do you think the odds are So, like, I think I saw a lot of video of, like, postmortems on the last Dallas-Minnesota series of Luka kind of just standing kind of around the baseline on defense, covering somebody in the corner, not really moving his feet at all during a possession. I mean, just saving all of that energy for offense, never really having to deal with foul trouble or frustration of players scoring on him. Do you think that Boston can or will try to flip the script on that and make Luka and Kyrie defend?
Dude, in my opinion, Luka and Kyrie have been defending, and you, sir, are now offending me.
Did I besmirch you and Luka's community?
Dude, Luka has 8 steals and 3 blocks in the last 3
games.
Look at this.
Here he goes.
Right. Luka has been getting his body in front of guys. He's been altering shots. He's been blocking some shots. In my opinion, Luka is playing D, and so are the Dallas Mavericks. Like, the Mavericks, I think, were a better defensive team than Minnesota was last series. And, you know, Minnesota supposedly was the number one defense in the league. And, yeah, I love the fact that everybody's like, oh, well, Dallas doesn't play defense. Okay, let's go see.
And for what it's worth, folks, it's like retweets. You know, I don't endorse the retweet or whatever. I'm just asking the questions here. I think, like, for example, Kyrie Irving, and I'll give Luka his love here in a second, but Kyrie Irving, like, had such a terrible rap for defense and also showed why every night. But he would gear up in, like, the NBA finals and play really good defense. And right now, I think the same is true. Like, I think it probably extends back into this past regular season, but he and Luka are not negatives on that side.
Well,
but
I mean,
don't you have to try to exploit something and make them work on that end?
They have a terrible reputation defensively, and it's well deserved based on you know, the last few years of history. But I'm telling you, the Mavericks started playing a different style of defense during that streak they went on near the end of the season when nobody could beat them. Like, everybody on that team was playing defense and stepping up. So I do not think that Dallas, like, Jrue Holiday is just not an offensive force. And Derek White can be, but if Derek White's got a guy like Luka guarding him, you know, like Luka said, I saw something on Twitter today where Luka's like, people say I'm not athletic. Just because I can't run fast or jump high doesn't mean I'm not athletic in other ways. Which I thought was funny because...
Wait, he said that? Luka did?
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, that's what Twitter told me. So I'm assuming that's what he said in one of his pressers was, I can't jump and I can't run fast.
If Luka didn't like that post-game beer, I wonder if that's more of the muscles would pop out, you know, the arms and such. People would realize this dude's freaking athletic. Like, nobody in the league can cover the speed strength combo while he can't jump, which is part of it. I mean, if you're strong and you're heavy, you know, the downside is you can't jump. But yeah, he's good.
The way he moves and gets into position to score and shoot, and keeping the defender away from him. I mean, I don't know what other word to use than graceful. Like, he's a graceful player when he goes into attack mode, and he usually finds a way to get it done. So I don't know, man. I'm so psyched about this series, and I can't wait to get it going.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny because we haven't shared notes on this, and you brought up one of the other questions that I wanted to try to work through here as I determined how much of my cash to throw down every night. Jrue Holiday and Derek White. So, like, Derek White's been really good offensively, and you saw it last year. Like, the guy can just flat-out shoot, and he's athletic, and he's pretty good dribbler, if not great, you know, like, just gets to the spots and he does the right thing so much. And then Drew is a different story for me. I mean, last year, and there was a ton going on in Milwaukee, but I thought he was really bad in the playoffs last year. Who knows what was going on with that team? You know, there was Coach Budenholzer's, you know, family situation going on, and maybe the writing was on the wall for that particular squad. But he was just bad. So I can't get that one out of my mind. Like, the potential for Drew Holiday to disappear has to be considered a real thing. But like the two of them, Drew Holiday is pretty good when he's good. So can the two of these guys make Dallas pay defensively? You kind of alluded to the fact that you didn't think so, but is there anything there that you think that those two guys will be the X factor, or are they just kind of destined to fall in line with how they've been playing throughout the season?
Holiday might be an X factor because he typically doesn't score very much, and he kind of came to life offensively the last couple games they played against the Pacers or whoever they beat. Yeah, it was the Pacers. He kind of came alive in that series. And I mean, the more weapons Boston can have on offense, I think the better off they're going to be. So I can see Holiday being an X factor. I don't know that Derek White is an X factor because he may get hot and blow up for one game. I just don't think he'll do it for the whole series. Holiday coming through with assists and points throughout the whole series would be a nice boost in addition to his defense.
Yeah, I mean, if he's scoring 20-ish plus points in a game, it's going to be real hard if anybody else is doing well for Boston. But let's talk about that Dallas defense a little bit more, because I really don't think people understand. I think people really do think, look at the Boston Celtics as like the 1985 Chicago Bears defense, because there's just such big names, you know, particularly in the backcourt. But like, the reason I think that Dallas has been so good, aside from the offense and the brilliance of Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, is the fact that Daniel Gafford, PJ Washington, Derek Lively, and then you throw in some of these wings, you know, the Derek Jones Juniors, the Josh Greens, even like Dante Exum, he's not really on the floor for his offense. You know, so like, it all comes together. If you've got Luka and Kyrie playing baseline average minimum defense, and I kind of think they crank it up at least in certain ways a little bit more above average, just that competitive instinct and really just winning certain aspects of the matchup. Maybe it's on the glass for Luka. With Kyrie, it's just being able to body guys up and not really be just kind of a turnstile. Like, this defense here, would you say they're better than Boston? Are they equal? Where would you go with that?
Well, in the playoffs, the Dallas's defensive rating was 111.1. And that's good for seventh place. And then Boston is at 108.7 in third. So, I mean, it's a pretty close matchup. I think Boston plays generally and all season long consistently plays better team defense. They just do everything so well as a team. You start out with the fact you've got the best defensive backcourt in the league with Holiday and White, and then Jaylen Brown is a good defensive player. Kristaps Porzingis, when he's down in the paint doing what he's supposed to be doing, he's a good shot blocker, and he alters a lot of shots. I just think Boston plays solid team defense. Dallas is weird because they were a terrible defensive team the first half of the season, and then they became a good defensive team when they got Gafford and PJ Washington, and they sort of all started buying into this man, we're a pretty good team. Let's everybody step it up on defense. I think it's a pretty close matchup defensively.
Yeah, I kind of got two different angles with where I want to go with this. Is one is like, okay, Kristaps Porzingis, Al Horford, Daniel Gafford, Derek Lively, with a side of PJ Washington. To me, I see Gafford and Lively can hang with whatever Kristaps Porzingis wants to do one-on-one. That leaves Al Horford, who's not really doing much of the, you know, putting offensive pressure on teams. He'll make you pay, but he's not going to put pressure on you initially. Is it the case that those Dallas players have the ability to shut down Boston's front court? And then I have a follow-up with that.
Yes. Al Horford's 38 years old. Derek Lively's a little kid. Gafford's not that old. And those guys are both elite rebounders and elite shot blockers. I think it's going to be very tough for Boston's big men to do anything, which is why it's going to be important for Jrue Holiday to step up offensively. And also, we don't know how healthy Porzingis is. I personally don't see Porzingis lasting the entire series.
That in of itself changes everything. If he can't go, it's really bad news for Boston. Now, kind of to get back to what I was getting at, so Porzingis, I think, again, it's a lot of different defenders. He can be really good one-on-one and kind of get what he wants out there. But against good defenders and with the way that this Boston team plays, it's going to be a lot of pick and pop with him, kind of camping out outside, five out looks. And it's the spacing issue with these guys. That's if you want to flip it around and why should Dallas be concerned with this Boston team? They're just going to fire threes left and right. What do you think about the spacing element? Do you think Dallas is going to have that more or less covered? Or is this the case that they're bigger, heavier, and maybe not as quick to deal with all of that? And that might be the path for Boston to winning?
Interesting. I haven't really thought about the spacing aspect of this series. But, I envision Dallas just being straight up man-to-man defense. So, do they have guys that can hang with the guy they're guarding? I think they do. But yeah, Boston shoots a lot of three pointers. They're gonna shoot a lot of three pointers in this series, and so is Dallas. You know, Luke is going to be firing up three-pointers. Kyrie's going to shoot three-pointers. PJ is going to shoot three-pointers. So, to your point, it may come down to who's getting the most open looks and who is shooting it well from beyond the arc. Because if anybody's off their game, like PJ Washington's been shooting really poorly lately, if he doesn't wake up and start making threes, that's going to make it tougher on Dallas. But as far as the spacing goes, I feel like Dallas's defenders are going to be able to stay with their men. I just don't know if they can get close enough to them to alter those shots.
You know, I got our producer, Andre Lemos, in my ear. Andre knows as much basketball as anybody out there, folks. So follow him. He won't tweet, though, I don't think. I wonder when we see this kind of a thing where the Celtics put Tatum on somebody like Gafford or Lively and then put like Porzingis on somebody like Derek Jones Jr. Start really dialing into the non-offensive initiator issues with that Dallas squad. You know, those two bigs, even though Lively's been great in the connector game, in the 4-on-3 game after the catch and the short roll, he's been really good. Gafford hasn't been terrible in that role, but nobody's accusing either of these guys of initiating offense. So you start to stick certain players on certain guys and try to either give your star offensive players a little bit of a rest or make it less appealing, as Andre said, for Luka to just like go at Kristaps Porzingis, because that's for Kristaps strengths on defense, he's going to be in a drop. And to me, drop coverage at the NBA level is, it's so questionable. And I understand why teams do it. You got to do it. If your guy can't get up to the level and he can't slide his feet and defend, which is the case with Kristaps Porzingis, it's going to be there. So you're going to have Luka with basically a defender on his back at all times, able to just sort of patrol the elbow and just kind of, if he wants that little floater, it's going to be there, and he's going to jump or like fake jump, and then somebody's going to collapse and he's going to throw a pass to a wide open corner 3-point shooter. So like, what adjustments do you think we'll start to see that kind of stuff going on early? Or do you think that Boston saves that? And if we do see something like that, is that like the last tool they have in the bag?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like we need to see what happens in game one before we can start talking adjustments and changing up defensive strategy, because honestly, I don't even know what Dallas's defensive strategy is right now. Like, I think they might go Jalen on Luka and you know, stick Drew and Derek switching and hanging around Kyrie and trying to shut him down. But I don't know that that's what they're going to do.
And while you're mulling that over, I'll throw another question out there. What about like coaching matchup and intangibles? Like, is there anything about either Joe Mazzulla or Jason Kidd where you're like, that's a concern or that's a strength? I think I could build cases many different ways for these guys.
I mean, experience-wise, I think Kidd gets the nod. Kidd played for the 2011 Mavericks, who won their last championship. He's got his team rolling right now. Everybody's fired up. Everybody's confident. Like, this Mavs team is so confident. And also, let's keep in mind that all the pressure really is on Boston here. Like, Boston was the number one team all year. This team was built to win a championship. This season was championship or bust for Boston. And that's a lot of pressure on, you know, a young head coach without a, you know, ton of head coaching experience. Meanwhile, the Mavericks are like, hey man, we're just happy to be here. We kind of got hot after the trade deadline, and now we feel like nobody can beat us, and we have the best player in the series. And usually in the finals, the team with the best player usually wins. And I just think Dallas is exuding confidence right now. And I think Kidd probably has talked to them about what it's going to be like going to Boston and how crazy those fans are going to be. There's all this drama with Kyrie Irving being a former Celtic, but I feel like Luke has already said, you know, if you guys mess with Kyrie, you're messing with me and you're messing with the whole team. And I almost feel like the negative energy that comes from Boston, Dallas is going to turn that back around into positive energy for them. So I don't know, man. I like
Luka's the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. He's just gonna take it all. Do not and give it back to him.
Do not poke the bear.
I got a few more things. We'll get out of here. I'm really curious about Peyton Pritchard and Sam Hauser. Like, they make Boston super special, because if the starters are giving it to you, and then, I mean, Hauser's probably the best shooter in the league. I don't know. Maybe Steph Curry, but like, I mean, talking like pure like set shot. If you want to take a guy that's going to shoot set shots, it's either going to be like Steph or Sam Hauser. You know, those guys just get going and it's all over. But do you think Dallas can shut those guys down?
That's a good question. I mean, Celtics bench is better than Dallas's bench. That is true. Pritchard is really good. He's probably going to be a factor in the series. Hauser's a great shooter, like you said. You know, it's funny. One of the people I do a podcast with, his name's Kieran Sprecher, and he was a high school teammate of Sam Hauser's. So he's been talking to me about Sam Hauser before really saw Sam Hauser blow up. And not that he ever blew up, but he had some big games. And you're right. He's a tremendous shooter. I think that gives Boston a little bit of advantage bench-wise. Those could be two key weapons. If Boston's having trouble slowing down the Mavs offense with their starting five, when each team gets into its bench, I mean, they could really use Hauser to their advantage because he may not be defended as well as, say, a Jaylen Brown or a Derek White. So
if I was Dallas, if I was Jason Kidd, I'd be circling those two names because I feel like if I can somehow shut them off, you're now telling Boston they've got to get, you know, however many points out of the core six, you know, and that's now to get 120 points per game, you know, or whatever the number is going to be to win. That's 20 per guy. You know, the bar gets real high if you can shut off those two dudes off the bench. I don't think they can. I don't know. Peyton's so low to the ground. I don't know who on Dallas, you know, strikes me. Hardy maybe, you know, somebody that's got foot speed that can come in and keep him from just wiggling around out there. Hauser is a guy you got to find in transition, and you just got to have great details management and make sure that once he crosses half court, somebody's got a body on him. The minute he gets going, things really those big threes are going to be the to me how they get handled by both teams, which is why Dallas is so scary. I don't think they get shook by any of this stuff. And you know, intangibles. Maybe let's close on this, like, intangibles game, Dallas or Boston.
Wow. You are asking some very deep questions, sir.
This is the finals, man.
The intangibles. I'm going to say Boston. It's the intangibles. Why? Just because they're a more
and why is that?
Well-rounded,
the scrappiness
all the way across the board squad. Dallas is going to go the way that Luka and Kyrie goes. So if Dallas is going to win this thing, Luka and Kyrie are both going to have to go off. Boston can win with, you know, pedestrian efforts from half of their starters because they have a deep bench and they have guys like you just talked about, Pritchard and Hauser coming in that can be really effective scorers, and Pritchard's also a really good point guard. So I think just the depth that Boston has gives them a little bit of an edge. And then also, I mean, I don't know if it counts as an intangible or not, but Boston also has home court, and that counts for something. So intangibles, I would say Boston probably gets the star there.
They've got home court. They've been to the finals. They've lost in the finals. So there's that whole narrative of you got to get there and lose once. And then on the flip side, what I'm watching for is that Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown competition, if you will. Do those guys start to dime up as we've seen in the past, though they've had plenty of good moments to show that they haven't or won't. I think that's a really close question about the intangibles. I think Luka and Kyrie, to me, I would bet on them with the intangibles versus the Jays. But your points about the balance of that Boston squad and center, the overall strength and talent of that team. I mean, the four games at home, all of that, it's close. I would probably lean Dallas, but I completely understand why you say Boston. Okay, let's get some predictions here. How many How many games and who wins?
I've got Dallas in seven.
Okay. I'll take Dallas in six, so we're not the same, but I'd be tempted to take seven. And if
I'm tempted to take six.
Yeah. It's really tough to see. But you know what? I've seen that Boston crowd get quiet, and it's usually because those guys that I mentioned, the two Jays, are struggling, and you get that little anxiousness in the room, and I could see it. I could see it. What about finals MVP? Any guesses there?
If Dallas wins, it's Luka. If Boston wins, it's Tatum to help make up for him getting snubbed in the Eastern Conference Finals MVP voting. And then the money, if you're going to bet it, I like Kyrie Irving because I think he's like plus 1,600. And that's pretty good odds for somebody who, if Boston decides they're going to try to stop Luka instead of stopping Kyrie, Kyrie could end up being the leading scorer in the series. So I think if I was going to throw $10 or $100 at a fun MVP bet, it would be Kyrie Irving. But my pick is Luka.
I hate to say that you're right, because the Jason Tatum kind of media brigade, I feel like he's great. Don't get me wrong, but I just feel like so many times I've never thought, yeah, he's so much better than Jaylen Brown, you know, or even like watching Derek White fly around the court for them. It's like, who's doing more here? You know, why is this guy just locked into this sort of MVP-esque best player in the league kind of talk? But you're right. If it's Boston, it's probably him. And then your bet on Kyrie. I don't know. Hey, did that Kyrie bet hit in the last series for the scoring?
No.
No, it didn't.
It was close.
Did it come close? Okay. Yeah. You're nibbling at something here, Steve. I think you're onto something. So we've done a long show here, and you're going to basically be knee deep in the NBA finals here at in 24 hours. So we don't have to wait any longer. I think this time off's been great. So I'm actually not complaining about it, though. I think we're all itching for some basketball. Tomorrow we're going to talk about the season in Chicago. So that'll be fun. One more time, I'd like to humbly ask you guys to like and subscribe to the show. Keep sending us feedback so we can keep improving the show. And if you're not a premium member, definitely keep an eye out for these promos. You can lock that rate in for life, and it's going to be stupid low. At Dr. A, D-O-C-K-T-O-R-A, at Aaron Bruschi, A-A-R-O-N-B-R-U-S-K-I, at Sports Ethos, and at Ethos Fantasy NBA. This has been Fantasy NBA Today, presented by Bet Online, a Sports Ethos presentation. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, be well.